Today's episode is supported by Carol, designers of the AI personalized fitness bike. Later in the show, I'm going to tell you how you can do the shortest, most effective workout backed by science. If you have habits you want to break or behaviors you want to change, have you considered hypnosis? Hypnosis can be used for everything from weight loss to managing pain and stress and even addiction. And today's guest is a world-leading cognitive hypnotherapist helping people gain control over all aspects of their life.
Potentially anything that the mind creates, cognitive hypnotherapy can help with. You can optimize your brain as much as you like, but if it's running bad software that's causing stress, you're undoing it as long as you're helping it. If you get to a point where you like who you are, everything else becomes possible, because it's usually a fear of other people's opinions that hold you back in life. I can see they're all bored, or they all hate me, or they think I'm overpromoted, or whatever it is. And that is all your bullshit. If we can dehypnotize you, so you're here now, being able to be present with these people and give them a chance to be them, life changes. Somehow, things are going to change.
Welcome to the Health Optimization Podcast. I'm Tim Gray, the UK's leading biohacker. This podcast is all about gaining actionable advice from the world's top experts and sharing new breakthroughs in nature, biohacking, technology, and longevity research to help you live longer and happier. Everything I cover on this podcast are the things I've learned from the world's top medical professionals, researchers, scientists, and authors in the health field. However, I'm none of those things. I'm just someone with a very keen mind for figuring out how to be as healthy as possible while aging gracefully and learning from the best. My only bias is health. Over 30 times more effective for weight loss than traditional therapy, 90% success rates for getting people to quit smoking, proven to get rid of phobias, reduce anxiety, lower blood pressure, and even help symptoms of IBS. Hypnotherapy is a super powerful tool for changing our behavior. But while many hypnotherapists treat symptoms with a one-size-fits-all approach, today's guest treats people and gets to the root cause of their issues. Trevor Sylvester is the creator of a system of hypnotic language called word weaving. The idea isn't just to fix one thing, but to give you the tools to gain control over anything in your life. Trevor is the founder of Cognitive Hypnotherapy and the Quest Institute, and was my teacher, actually I prefer mentor, for 5 years or more. I did my training with him and qualified through Quest Institute, so I've seen how impactful this work is firsthand.
So, Trevor, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm really pleased to be here.
Just to kick things off, firstly, what do you think that people can achieve by knowing cognitive hypnotherapy?
I think there's different levels of benefit that you can get, because you could walk in to see a cognitive hypnotherapist and you would get help with issues like biting your nails or losing weight or quitting smoking, and all of that's perfectly doable. You know, anxiety and phobias, it's just kind of grist to the mill. But I think therapy gets interesting when you actually look at what I think therapy is really about, which is about your relationship to yourself, improving that. You know, if you get to a point where you like who you are, everything else becomes possible, because it's usually a fear of other people's opinions that hold you back in life. And what I find is that when people come in with their issue, it's usually just a symptom of actually that thing that's lying underneath, which is, you know, am I acceptable to other people? And when you get rid of that, when you no longer care about that, your whole horizon opens up and you can begin to think about, what am I actually here for? What am I here to do? And you suddenly realize how you've been surrounded by these messages from our culture about how we're supposed to live, which is one of the reasons you come to therapy in the first place, because it's making you unhappy. Mm. And you very often get clients pivoting to different choices that once they would have thought would be beyond them. Mm. So the sky's the limit, really.
Mm. It's interesting you touch on the whole caring about what people think or your perception of yourself, or, you know, I guess that comes to inner worth and things. Mm. I'll share something from my journey, actually. Obviously, as guys will find out more about this during the episode, but I'm a qualified cognitive hypnotherapist, how we know each other. I trained with you, you know, back from 2008 or 9 through for many years, even to the master practitioner level. So I would say I'm quite well versed in this. But along my journey of health optimization post all of that, I got into ketamine therapy. I got into ketamine therapy very heavily, actually.
Did you?
And I pretty much did it 80% of the time for nearly a year, working through stuff on a daily day basis on a lowish level. Mm-hmm. Anyway, one day, and I was actually higher than normal, but I stopped and I went to get something off the shelf and I looked in the mirror and I just stayed there. I was there 25 minutes, staring at myself in the mirror. And I remember when I had done LSD when I was a kid, and I looked in the mirror and I was just like, I look weird, this isn't right, and didn't feel right in my skin. But this time with the ketamine therapy, I stood there for so long. I actually felt like all my self-judgment and self-hate and not accepting myself melted away. And I could almost visualize it melting away. And at that moment, I stopped caring what people think, to, you know, with exceptions, but stopped caring about what people thought of me. So when I hear a hate piece or something or other, I'm like, actually, they just don't know who I am. And I now accept myself. Mm. So it's a massive part. And I think, you know, obviously I've been doing therapy for a very long time. And yet that was like a massive shift.
It's a hard place to get to, because I think almost from the minute we're born, we are set on that path. You know, it's almost like in our culture, we begin with original sin. So there's something wrong with us from the very beginning. And that's reinforced because then people can sell us things to make us feel better about ourselves. And then we do jobs that we don't really want to do because we're told they're the ones we should, to get approval from others. And so getting to a place where you have control over your own choices and you're not doing it because of what other people might think of you, that's a tough road. And I think cognitive therapy is a significant place to begin that journey. And I too have experienced psychedelics in the last 5-6 years. I began with ayahuasca. I went and trained as a psychedelic guide in Colorado. Psilocybin and all of those, they all helped. They all gave me another insight into really seeing, it transformed my thinking around cognitive fitness therapy, of seeing where it fitted to where now I look on therapy as social activism, you know, that we're helping people get back to owning themselves so that then they can go out and make choices that would benefit the world better than this reinforcing cycle, you know, where we wounded and we wound the world back. And then the world comes back and creates this feedback loop of pain, you know, and something's got to break it, and it begins with you.
I think one of my favorite questions for today is the next one that I'm going to ask. And it's because people that are listening to this are probably thinking cognitive hypnotherapy, just thinking of, you know, standard hypnotherapy. And when people say to me, you know, what did you train in and this, that, and the other, I say cognitive hypnotherapy. They say like CBT or this, that, and the other. I was like, no. So for the listener that has no idea what the difference is with hypnotherapy and cognitive hypnotherapy or even traditional therapy, from the man himself, how would you define cognitive hypnotherapy compared to the others?
Do you know, I was thinking about this on the way here, because for 25 years, we've tried to have a quick, you know, lift pitch description of cognitive hypnotherapy, and I've never arrived at it yet. So here's today's version: that what cognitive hypnotherapy is a model that trains the therapist to listen to the person in front of you, to hear their uniqueness and the way that they've created their issue, so that by hearing it, you can then choose the techniques from anywhere else in any talking therapy that fits that person precisely. We don't do diagnoses, we don't do labels. We just deal with the person in front of us, because you could have 6 people with anxiety and they've each got a different way of creating it and sustaining it and experiencing it. So there is no one size all treatment. And CogHip is just a great way of fitting the person to the method, if you like. And it looks at, say, because it's called hypnotherapy, trance is involved. So the way that our brain works is that it's trying to keep us protected at all times. And all of the behaviors that people come to therapy for are your unconscious doing its best to keep you safe. And what it does to achieve that is take you into trance, which is just creating a perception around you that you're under threat. And it might be a threat from a perfectly normal dog walking towards you. If you have a dog phobia, suddenly it creates the impression that dog is dangerous, which causes you then to act in a way it thinks is best. So what we are doing isn't hypnotizing you into getting better. It's dehypnotizing you from what you thought was wrong. That's a key difference.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. I mean, one of the things that when I was training, actually, it was an eye-watering moment with you specifically, because you looked at me and you said, I think you are a EN, you know, FJ, and I believe you're visual, auditory, digital. And that means that this is how you operate. And my eyes watered over and I went, I've got to know this. Like, this is fantastic, because You knew, and we had met for half an hour in my induction or checking out to see if I was worthy of Coghip courses. We'd not had much interaction, but you knew that within 3 minutes of speaking to me. And it's like, for the listener, when you say it's tailored to the person, the difference is you understand that person's personality types, their preferred senses, how they see the world, how they feel the world, whatever, and then adjust the therapy for them.
Absolutely right.
And my definition of Coghip is often, like, for instance, you can learn NLP, which people have a negative perception of quite heavily and think it's manipulative, but it's still an amazing tool if used in the right hands. You have standard hypnotherapy, you have psychotherapy, you have CBT, you have EFT, all these different acronyms. Coghip, I believe, picks the one or two or three that's right for that person that might not be right for someone else because they don't see the world in the same way.
Absolutely. It makes no sense to me that you would think that everyone would fit just because of the label that is given to their symptoms, especially when the symptom isn't usually what it is underneath that's wrong with them. So discover what their story is, you know. So really, what I really want with the people that I teach is for them just to get great at listening, because people tell you everything you need to know about them if you just listen. You know, when they choose what they're speaking about, if you say, where did you go on holiday? How they answer you will tell you a lot about who they are and the way they organize their thinking. And if you understand those things, then it just shortens the period that you need to spend with them to help them get on their way. Because they're not broken. They don't need fixing. And they have all of the answers. You just got to help them find their way to them. So I'm not giving them anything. I'm just facilitating, really.
Making them have realizations and you helping them to get to it.
Yeah. Because my realizations about their condition are outsights. I might think they're insights, but they're in my head. They're not in theirs. So if I can use my understanding of the way their mind is working and offer it to them, and it makes their eyes glaze and they go, that's me, that's brilliant. But it's what they do with that makes the difference. It's not me.
The other thing for me is that one of the other things that I learned from along the way with cognitive therapy was actually Robert Cialdini's work, Influence, and the six influences. And it's rapport being one of the most important ones, or they're all important, but rapport. It's like, if you have rapport, you like someone and they understand you and you can communicate, you're much more likely to be influenced by them. And I'm talking in a positive sense here. Absolutely. And it works obviously in a negative sense as well. But with a therapist, if you sit down with a therapist and they say, I can see I can feel how you operate and how you see the world, you have that level of rapport that you wouldn't with a traditional psychotherapist ticking boxes, you know, running through the list of, you know, the usual questions that have been taught to ask. No offense to psychotherapists, by the way, it's just a different way.
Rapport is everything, you know, because it is about... Therapy is a relationship between two people, and it's just another kind of conversation between those people. And it leads in a certain direction. But you mentioned NLP being criticized for being manipulative, but to manipulate just means to handle. And so you're handling each other at every phase of a conversation, and you either handle them well or badly. And if I don't understand how you operate, and I just make the common mistake of treating you like you're me, and I'm speaking in my language, not in yours, then that's going to break the rapport. So it's a simple thing of just operate on their wavelength, and then they let you into their world, and then we both begin to help them move forward. You know, it's a collaborative effort.
I'm going to touch on, because we had one session. I had a tough time not long after I finished training, actually. We did one session, which I'm going to touch on in a while, which is highly relevant to this exact point. So I'm really looking forward to sharing the learning from that one session we had.
Cool.
So tell me more about these everyday trance states and how we enter different hypnotic brain states throughout the day.
It's an important point to make, because so often people think that of hypnotherapy, you know, swinging a watch and looking into my eyes and it being a special state that's reserved for special occasions. But really, if you actually look at your day-to-day life, you drift in and out of the here and now all the time. You know, you think about what you're going to do later on. You think about what you did last night. You see someone and they remind you of somebody, and then you're thinking about them. And all kinds of things can be happening around you that you just don't notice. So when we talk about trance, it's with a small t. It's just those changes of your attention that take you from what's happening right now in this space here to what is happening inside your head. And the way the mind works is it's creating this, what we call a reality tunnel around you, that 13 times a second, it's taking information in from the world, it's making sense of it, and then projecting it back out around you. So you're in a kind of a hologram that your brain's creating. And it's its best guess of what is the best version to keep you safe and moving forward. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so as we go through our life, our brain makes certain decisions about places that are safe, places that are unsafe, and it will guide our responses accordingly. Mm. So these trances, you'll see clients come in and they'll say, you know, I have performance anxiety. If I'm in a board meeting and I have to stand up and speak, I can see they're all bored, or they all hate me, or they think I'm overpromoted or whatever it is. And that is all your bullshit. You're projecting that because of something that happened in your past. Mm. And your brain is saying, what is this going to be like? Mm. What is this situation going to be like? And it goes back to a time in your past when something similar happened, and it goes, it's just like this. Mm. And it recreates, in a way, your present can sometimes just be your remembered past, but you begin to act like that's true again, mm. which is why we say, if we can dehypnotize you, so you're here now, just being able to be present with these people and give them a chance to be them, mm. you can actually meet them. Mm. And life changes.
It's funny, as you're saying that, I remember something very specific that actually changed my life from what I learned on the course, and actually with many people I've met along the way that I've shared it with. So I used to get nervous with meetings, like meetings with the board mm-hmm. members, like for instance, if I was selling to a client or whatnot. And that would also be in my dating life as well. I was quite nervous with meeting new people. And in one of the training courses, actually, you did word weaving, which we're going to touch on word weaving, guys, and this is going to blow your mind at some point today, is that as you walk into the meeting room, you may wonder what it is that makes you realize how comfortable you feel. Mm-hmm. And so, and I never forget this, because every single time I walked into that situation, and my unconscious would trigger and go, oh, I'm in this situation, I'm like, what is it that's going to make me feel comfortable? Like looking around, and it's just like, this really is powerful, because it's like, here's an automatic response, an emotional response to something, but my brain, my thinking is stronger than my emotions. Mm-hmm. And I had control. And then after a while, I stopped thinking it and I was just okay with it. And mm-hmm. then one day I was sitting around the table with a whole group of very important people that are paying my company a lot of money at the time. I was just like, I'm so comfortable and enjoying this, and I'm conversing with no problems mm-hmm. at all. So it's just crazy how interrupting this.
Yeah.
And but these states.
The craziness is that we're not like that in the first place, isn't it? Mm. You know, why do we carry this rubbish around with us that says I should be scared in this situation when there's no danger and you don't even know these people? Mm. And they're worrying about their stuff as well at the same time. So, you know, there's just this joint trance going on when no one is actually meeting each other properly. Mm. And that is just an example of what we call priming. You know, what is on your mind is brought to mind. So if you walk in feeling that this is potentially a threatening situation, you're going to create the threat in the situation and act accordingly. Mm. Whereas if word weaving can prime you to begin to wonder what it will be that will make you feel different, mm. then your brain goes on a hunt. Mm. And there's always differences around you that you could latch onto, because you feed what you focus on. Mm. The more you focus on the things that you're comfortable about, the greater your comfort grows. Mm. The more you focus on the things you're uncomfortable about, guess what? You live in an uncomfortable world. It's yeah. it's just a software update.
What is it? Where your energy goes, grows, I think it's it.
Yeah.
And for you guys listening in, I was smiling. And you may see this on the videos, because Trevor was word weaving, which you'll learn about in a while, very heavily in that sentence. He'd probably do it completely naturally without realizing it. But it's actually amazing to hear it in this setting of like how you interweave. And
that's probably you sitting in class, you know, for a couple of years with me, and I'm using that in class all the time. So in a way you're anchored mm. that I begin to do that, and mm. your brain takes you back and going, oh, that reminds me, and it puts you in a good place.
It's fantastic. Word weaving is literally incredible. So we're gonna touch on it, so I'm gonna stop banging on about it for a minute. But I'm gonna be honest, I'm pretty excited for this episode, as you can probably tell, guys. Before we move on to the next question, I just want to touch on my thing about the trances throughout the day, is that obviously since learning cognitive hypnotherapy, I've been very conscious of the different trances. Mm. For instance, love making, or playing with the dog, or mm-hmm. walking on the beach, or, you know, semi asleep, whatever. These are the different states that we're in naturally, and, you know, and everyone can relate to most of those, I would imagine. And in a therapy setting, understanding that we come in and out of these states and then knowing how to interrupt if we need to or how to adjust if we need to. When people say, oh, I don't believe I can be hypnotized or I don't think hypnotherapy can work for me. It's like, can you remember when you were intimate with your partner last and you were miles away? And if you can't, if you can say yes, then you are in different states and trances. Mm. And therefore, hypnotherapy will work. You're just fighting it for some reason. That's my opinion on this.
Well, it was a lovely thing because when people come to see me, and because, you know, they see the stage hypnosis done on television, and so they have very set ideas about what hypnosis is going to be. So, of course, a lot of them will doubt that it can happen, but they brought to me a problem. And the, if they've got a problem, they're great at going into trance because they're in trance while they do their problem. Mm. So I only have to say, tell me what you're here for, and they go into a trance telling me. So I only have to use that trance. I don't have to create a different one. Mm. It'd be crazy to say, well, stop thinking about that now and close your eyes and go and lie on a beach. What's the point of that? They've shown me what I need to use to help them get better. Mm. So they can't not be hypnotized, really. Mm. Even if I say, okay, stay there and don't be hypnotized, they're going in into a don't be hypnotized trance state. Mm. There's no way of wriggling out of it. We can't stay present. Eckhart Tolle talked about being here now and how, you know, in a sense, it's completely unnatural to stay here now. Our brains are made to go backwards and forwards to make up what is reality around us. So the skill is to avoid trance. That's a hard gig.
Mm. It's actually interesting because the different psychedelics or different drugs do different things, obviously. Mm. But I can't remember which one it was, but I remember thinking when I was on it, and I was like, I'm in the moment, completely in the moment. Mm. I'm not thinking about the future. I've not got any anxiety or any thoughts about the future. I'm not thinking about anything from the past or anything. I'm in now. And it was ketamine. I couldn't remember something properly that I'd read 5 seconds ago. I was reading the text message and I'm like, I can't remember what the previous message was. But I'm so in the moment. Mm. And actually, I think it drowned out, or should I say deleted, so much noise from the brain.
Yeah.
It's like hyper-focus. And then I could have amazing realizations like looking in the mirror and accepting myself.
I think there's huge potential in psychedelic therapy if it's done in the right way. It's not the answer for everybody. It needs to be introduced responsibly. Mm. I hope they don't put walls around it. You know, and certain agencies keep it to themselves. There's also a danger in it just jumping the fence again, like it did back in the 60s and 70s, and it becoming recreational. Mm. Used well with a proper focus and intention, it can be life-changing. And part of that, I think, is this ego dissolution that you experience, where you just let go of all of your crap and you do recognize this connection with everything. Mm. You know, we are not separate to nature. We're not separate to each other. Mm. Everything is part of everything else. And that loops me back again to seeing therapy as social activism, because we are suffering from a massive disconnection in this world to the world and to each other. And if we can heal that, things might begin to change. So, you know, I think there's an exciting road forward with the use of cognitive hypnotherapy and psychedelics, should they become legal. That could really be a real sea change in humanity, even.
I think it is going to be different now. And I tell you this because I met with a company a few months ago who had just raised investment, and they were doing psychedelic research in England, London, and they had a body for doing research on multiple people. And I think from memory, they were moving into the ketamine side of things as well.
Really?
So, and this is psilocybin and ketamine and whatnot. And I said, why is a fund investing in a research thing for psychedelics? Because there's not really a lot of money in psychedelics. And you know, when people start investing, it's because they want more money. And they said, because our clients will become pharma because they can patent the product. But the point is while that can be perceived to be evil, it's also meaning that something that is not mainstream or widely accepted as a pharmaceutical is being turned into a pharmaceutical and will be more widely available for therapy setting.
Yeah.
So it's the change is coming for sure, because pharmaceutical are already investing in it. Like, and this is 3-4 years out. So I'm pretty confident it's going to change.
Let's hope so. If it becomes legalized through that route, I'll take any route that makes it available to people in the right circumstances still. So let's hope so.
When I started biohacking my health, I tried out all kinds of fitness gear that didn't work. What did work for me was the Carol bike. Leading exercise researchers created the Carol bike to deliver very fast results. They built, tested, and retested the design and AI capabilities. The result is nothing like any other fitness bikes. In just 5 minutes, Carol's AI personalized workouts efficiently push you to your limits and improve your cardiovascular health. Here's what can happen in 8 weeks. You'll reset your VO2 max by 12%, effectively dialing back your fitness clock by 10 years. You'll reduce your risk for type 2 diabetes by 62%, and you can do it in 90% less time compared to regular cardio. That means 2 20-second sprints 3 times a week. I know you've got time for that. Check out carolbike.com/timbiohacker. Use the code timbiohacker to get $100 off. You can find the links in the show notes below. Remember, if you want to learn how to take control of your health and you're sick of traditional healthcare and temporary fixes, you should come to the Health Optimization Summit. You can join other like-minded enthusiasts and meet the world's leading minds in health, wellness, and science. You can even test out a load of groundbreaking health tech and latest supplements. Get your tickets at healthoptimization.com.
What range of issues can be treated with cognitive hypnotherapy then?
Well, I don't want to make it sound like it's the be all and the end all, because nothing is. But potentially anything that the mind creates, cognitive hypnotherapy can help with. So again, if we just go from the surface level of things, you could begin with something like nail biting and teeth grinding and weight loss and smoking and anxiety and depression and phobias, all those kind of everyday things. And you can move on then, and it can help with addictions. It can help with post-traumatic stress disorder. There is no real limit. But again, I want to return to the fact that so often what people come through the door with, the label that they've given to themselves or been given by other people to themselves, is just the symptom of what it will turn out to be about, which is usually about, like I've said before, how do I feel about me and how do I think others feel about me? So often we overuse the kind of peel and onion metaphor, but often things transform as you go through the process of therapy. And by the end, what used to bother you, you can't quite remember. And what bothers you now is a whole different level that now you're working on. Because I think I used to say that everybody needs therapy, but people don't need very much. Yeah. And now I see really the action of therapy, not just being of when you're in a room with a therapist. It's just part of this whole life movement of where you're trying to develop yourself as a human being. Yeah. And I don't think it ever ends. You know, I'm 64 now, and I've been in this business for nearly 30 years, and I'm still developing. And sometimes it really frustrates me when I think, why have I been so slow to see this about me? It's so obvious, but we're strangers to ourselves, you know, and some, you know, I think I'm a slow learner about myself sometimes. And so I'm not looking now to just say, see therapy as this thing you come to for 6 sessions and you're finished. Really, the 6 sessions will just open a door that you can go through, which will give you another level of existing that hopefully will be more beneficial, but which will bring more questions, which then you go on to find other ways of answering. So it just kind of goes on.
Awesome. So how powerful is it and how quickly does it work?
I hate that question. How powerful it is depends on the person you have in front of you and the relationship you have. You know, all research, as proud as we can be of our model, and psychotherapists are proud of theirs, and so are counsellors, and quite rightfully, all research shows that the key ingredient is the relationship between you and the client, the therapist and the client. And so I think cognitive hypnotherapy is a great vehicle because of our emphasis on relationship and rapport, that it can be incredibly powerful. And with some people, you'll bounce straight off them and it's not going to work. So there's a scale of life-changing to meh, you know. And then what was the second half? Oh, how quickly?
Yes.
It's a piece of string. You know, I've had one session with you and I'm hoping you're going to say that was really beneficial. I'm not going to create miracles in every single one session thing. And I never like the pressure of that. I've worked with people for several years before we got them to where they wanted to go. I don't care about how quick it is. I care about how permanent it is. So we'll keep on working until really they sack me, you know, in terms of them not needing me anymore. That's really how therapy should go. We shouldn't need a lifelong relationship. I hear from people sometimes 5 years after or even longer since I've last seen them because they've hit a bump in the road they want more help with. But in between times, they have been self-guiding, because I think the brain is. It's a guidance mechanism with our hormones and neurotransmitters that either guides us into a life of protection, which is unnecessary largely, or a life of growth. And so I want to people come to see me and the people I train, and they think I'm going to fix them. And then I persuade them to see that it's going to be me and them that fix them. Mm. And then after a while, they realize it's them fixing them. They don't need me anymore. Mm. And that's what I see as success.
Yeah, I love that. It reminds me of one of the first classes I was in, sat in with you, and you're talking about traditional hypnotherapy or traditional therapy. And it's quite an important point, which I'm bringing it up. It's like, how many sessions do they need? Well, a lot of therapists want 10, 20, 30, like they want to have a full practice. Mm. They want to keep on getting you back. It's like, but we aim to do it very quickly. Like, as in, like, we tried to get it done 3, 6, however, even if it's one session. And I never forget that, because it makes you think, this is strong morals and ethics in terms of money making and taking advantage of people that need help.
Without promising that it's going to be instant. Mm. I think that's a key thing, because, you know, every time I sit in front of somebody and I hope it's going to be today, that they actually have the insight that makes them go, why am I wasting my time on this thing that isn't real? Mm. Sometimes it might take, you know, it might take one session, it might take 6 sessions, it might take 2 years for them to get that insight. Because you remember this story I tell about how I'm left-handed, and so most tools and things don't work with me. And I've always been amazed how Bex, my wife, can cut a loaf of bread and every slice is perfect. And with me, every single one of them is a wobbly. And because I'm a bloke, I think just faster and harder will solve the problem with the carving knife. Mm. And I realize that you have to cut at the speed of the bread. Mm. Doesn't matter what tools you have, the client is the bread. And so you cut at the speed, you move them at the speed they're capable of going. Mm. And some people, that's one session. Other people, it's not.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? It's like, do people have a problem with authority, or do people just need permission to do something? And can the door just be open and they want to run through it? Yeah. Or do they just want to walk into the door and or whatever?
How introspective they are. Yeah. We talk about ELOC and ILOC, having an external locus of control, which means you're dependent on how you are according to how the world treats you. So you look to other people for your solutions. Mm. Or are you ILOC, have an internal locus of control, where you say, what can I do here? Mm. And the road of therapy really is taking people from ELOC to ILOC. And when you get to being in that situation where you say, I'm going to control the experience I have today of being me, then nobody can hurt you and nothing can knock you off your path. And that's nirvana, because, you know, I've been doing this all this time and I still get jerked into ELOC and people annoy me and frustrate me and stuff. But I'm better than I was. Mm. And that's the path, isn't it? Being better than we were yesterday.
Yeah. Actually, it's one of my reminders for my daily task list. Do you consider yourself to be better today than you were yesterday? Ah. Every day. And then it's like, I write the answer. Same with my 3 gifts every
night. It only has to be, you know, 0.5% improvement each day, because it's compound again. Anything more than nothing is success. Mm. So fail today and then just do better tomorrow. Mm. Don't fail the same way. Fail in a different way.
So, as you mentioned, our unconscious mind does a good job of protecting us, but sometimes it does more harm than good, as we know. A good example is that the story of Mrs. Toothbrush, which I'm going to bring up.
That's an old toothbrush.
Yes, can you tell me about Mrs. Toothbrush?
Cool, blimey. That's going back a long, long time. It's in one of my books.
Yes, it is.
It was a lady who came to see me many, many, many years ago, and she'd never been able to brush her teeth. And this is a lady who was in her 40s. And as you can imagine, the teeth were in a terrible condition, but she was terrified of going to a dentist and terrified of having anything placed in her mouth, forks, anything. And so I used a technique called timeline to take her back to the root cause of it. Mm. Wasn't it her mother was just brushing her teeth badly? Do you remember it?
No, yeah, it was actually, I remember it very well, because it stuck with me, because I've probably told 150, 200 people this over
I've
the last
I've updated
years.
My stories as I teach.
But so basically when she was born, they had to resuscitate her. So they threw a tube down her throat to save her for some reason. Maybe born premature or something. I can't remember the exact details, but it's like, but her unconscious mind, even as a newborn, was triggered and always had that as a protective mesh, and until you made her aware of it.
Yeah. And isn't that amazing that something like that could happen? But, you know, from my own life, I don't drink to this day. I don't drink hot liquids. Mm. But when I did therapy to find out why I don't, it was because my mum, when I was about 2 or 3, she introduced me to tea in a cup, and the tea was too hot and she wasn't particularly paying attention, and it scalded my tongue. Mm-hmm. And my brain instantly went, this is a threat. Keep this away from you. So from that time on, any feeling of heat around my mouth was uncomfortable for me. And so I just kept away. I didn't have gravy on my dinner. I didn't have custard on my puddings. No hot liquids at all until I was about 15 or 16.
Wow.
And I've just never gone to hot liquids for drink, even though I've got rid of that as a phobia now. I thought, well, I've gone this far. I don't see that tea and coffee are particularly beneficial to me, so I haven't bothered with it. But that's how quickly we can gain these away from responses to certain things. One time learning, our brains are capable of doing, and then it just kind of cascades from there.
I think in the health optimization or biohacking space, traditionally, or functional medicine or whatever, you know, things like acupuncture are far more mainstream now, and they've been adopted by the medical system and insurance companies and things like that. Hypnotherapy is more and more integrated, even though it's had a lot of resistance for obvious reasons. But in the health and optimization and biohacking space, we talk about brain health, as in like how it fires, and like Dave Asprey's 40 years of Zen, and all these different treatments, but like neurofeedback and things, but we don't actually talk about, not the hardware, more the software, I guess, as in like the programming that we've had along the way. And I think cognitive hypnotherapy, obviously psychology and all these areas, is to understand why we're doing this stuff. And the mind-body connection, as they say, although we're one thing, it's like you only have to perceive a threat for your body to have a physiological response to it. So for instance, if you're threatened by whatever it may be, you're stressed, you're blood flow shuts down, goes to the muscles, or should I say your blood flow re-diverts to the muscles that you're ready to run from a threat, which is what stress does, which is why when you're super stressed, going through a breakup, whatever it may be, you become less hungry because your digestion isn't there. So if you're chronically stressed, you're going into work 9 to 5 on the tube, stressed out, got money issues, got relationship issues, whatever, your body's always running from a threat.
Yeah.
And
your body can't tell the difference between what's real and what's your imagination.
Yeah.
Because it all emerges from the brain because everything's being processed through your senses.
And then you don't digest your food properly. You don't get the nutrients properly, which means your brain doesn't fire properly. And you get more like psychological issues. And maybe you go and see a psychotherapist. But it's a part, for me, why I wanted you on the show today was because I really want this area to be integrated more into health optimization. Because if you can take that stress away from the mind by getting these things to be reprogrammed, such as a phobia of a toothbrush or fish, and take that stress away in those situations, then your health will become better for it, and your digestion will, and as a result, you...
Absolutely. You know, Descartes did us no service at all when he separated mind from body, you know, where we talk about the mind and body connection. There is no connection between mind and body because there's no disconnection between them. They're the same thing. They're part of a whole. And I agree with you. We've got to look at this as an integral thing. My learning over the last 4 years or so is of having long COVID, you know, where I greatly neglected my body's part in getting me well again. I thought it was all going to be down to my mind because that's where I live in most of the time, you know, and it's been a major insight. And, you know, your stuff has really guided me into the potency of that, where I would never have thought of prebiotics and stuff being having any impact on something that was a viral condition. And it absolutely has. And I've changed my diet and my mind is better, you know. So we've got to look at the whole. I always used to dislike holistic because often it just used to be a kind of wishy-washy term. But in its real meaning, we do have to look at the whole package of health and what's available to us. So you got to look after the mind and the body.
I agree. And typically biohacking looks after the body, not necessarily the mind, except for the gear itself. And psychology or psychotherapy does the other. And I find it bonkers how, you know, you can go and see a psychotherapist and they don't ask you about your gut health or your diet or anything like that. And yet and they're talking about neurotransmitter problems, basically.
You can optimize your brain as much as you like, but if it's running bad software that's causing stress, you're undoing it as fast as you're, as long as you're helping it, you know, so we've got to look at both.
So I promise we're going to more detail on this. So tell us about the hypnotic language you developed. We call word weaving. And like the name might suggest, it probably gives you a good clue. But I want to hear what you think.
Right. Okay. I didn't invent it. I borrowed it. I borrowed different bits of it from different people. There was a guy back in the 60s and 70s called Milton Erickson who was an absolute genius with language. And then these two guys, Bander and Grinder, who developed NLP, came along and they studied him and they figured out how he did these miraculous changes with the people through the words that he was using. And there were two, there's the traditional school of hypnotherapy is very script-based, i.e. they read the same thing out for each label, and it tends to be direct and authoritarian. So it tells the person listening what their experience is going to be. And it can work. On some people, it can work. Whereas word weaving, being based on Milton Erickson's pedigree, if you like, is more around priming the listener to the possibilities of what they might experience, that by experiencing it would mean they're getting better. So I ask my clients how they would know that what was a problem is no longer a problem. What would be different in their world? So they give me their imagined solution. And then I just create suggestions that would begin to open the possibility of them beginning to notice those things around them that would mean that's happening. And of course, those things around them are always there. I just don't know what they are. But I send their brain off on a hunt to find the answer to that question. So as you walk into a boardroom, you might not be aware of what's in there that's going to make you feel comfortable, but something could. But if I say to you, it'll be the lady sitting there in the red dress that's going to make you feel comfortable. Well, A, we don't know if there's going to be a woman in there with a red dress. And is she the type that's going to make you feel comfortable anyway? She might be someone that reminds you of your school teacher when you were five. And so by me trying to predict your future, I'm risking everything. Mm. Whereas if I just say something out there may help you, then your brain is open to the possibility that that could happen. Mm. And more often than not, it will.
Yeah, possibility is actually, if it's plausible, I always remember that if it's plausible.
It doesn't have to be true, it just has to be plausible.
Exactly, yeah. It's like, it's actually a very, very, very powerful thing. It's like, you will experience this. No, I won't. It's like, you may find that something makes you experience this. You know, or and various variants of it. So it's actually really, especially for the stubborn people that don't want to be told what to do and yet they want to fix themselves with therapy. So it's,
What I've always admired about the people who've influenced me is how little they seem to do. They're not busy with their clients. There's a guy called Ruben Bettino who is in his 90s now, still working. Amazing man, trained by Erickson. And one of his magic words that he uses with his clients is somehow. Somehow things are going to change. It's a beautiful word because it contains everything in the universe that could possibly influence this situation without dictating what that thing's going to be. So over the course of all of his practice, he's just refined down, as Erickson did, as I hope I do, what is the simplest thing I can suggest that will have the maximum impact without dictating in any way what that's going to be. So I try to keep my ideas out of it and just use theirs back on them.
I love that. So once you've fixed an issue for a client, how does word weaving help them get control over other aspects of their lives, would you say?
Right. Once together we've helped them fix their problem, what word weaving does is I'll make a recording. So usually during the session, it'll be the thing that kind of ends the session. And it only lasts for about 10 minutes because the recording will be sent to them and I task them with listening to it every single night. So it's like having the consolidation of therapy on a repetitive basis. So it tends to be the glue that holds the change together. They hear different things each time they listen as their mind changes, and the kind of effect just grows over time. And I find that if you do it longer than 10 minutes, everyone's got 10 minutes. But if it's 20 minutes before you want to fall asleep, 20 minutes is a bit of a drag, but 10 minutes is fine. And most people fall asleep listening to it after a while. And it doesn't matter because I'm not talking to them. I'm talking to their unconscious and our ears never shut down. So it's the glue in a way that just keeps the change in their brain together while their brain makes it permanent. Because otherwise, if I'm not going to see them for a couple of weeks or a month, life can happen in between. But if they can come back and recenter themselves by listening to the messages that I put into the word weaving, which are the things they've said they need to hear to know they're getting better, then it's going to reduce the time they need to come to see me.
Problem state and solution state.
Absolutely.
It's funny, I'm grinning through this because this is one thing I really wanted to add into this episode, because when I came to you and I called in a favor and said, I'm having a really tough time. I'm not sure if you remember it as well as I do, but I'm having a really tough time. I'm having a bit of anxious or down and whatnot. And You know, and we did a session of just talking therapy, I would say, which is typically cognitive hypnotherapy before you did the word weaving with me. And one of the things that I don't remember saying, but I do, if that makes sense. I mean, I know I said it, but I don't remember the exact way. But you said, what's the problem? And I said, well, I'll be on the tube on the way into work every day. Everyone be looking down at their phones. They're all miserable. They're not happy. And I feel like I'm just like a rat in the tubes, basically. And you said, okay, so what is it you feel that you should do? Or similar. And I said, follow the fun. Anyway, within my word weaving audio, so the next day or the day after that, you sent me an audio to listen to, which I did every single day for many months, actually. And I would do it when I got into bed. So a lot of the time I'd fall asleep, but I learned it almost word for word because I listened to it so much. But one of the things that still sticks with me today is follow the fun.
Is it really?
It had such a massive impact on my whole life. It helped me sell a company, helped me change my direction. It helped me get into biohacking. It helped so many different things just from that one line. And The thing is, it's a powerful line, but it's as cognitive hypnotherapy and word weaving is. It came from me.
It came from you.
It was picked out by you and it was given back to me. And I listened to it consistently over a period of time until I truly believed it of something that I wanted to believe or wanted to do. So that's the power of word weaving and it's taken away. So yeah.
It's the power of listening, isn't it really? Mm. Because people have their own solutions if you just key into them really. And I can't tell you how happy that makes me.
Mm. Yeah, I'm very happy to be able to tell you actually, because every time it comes on my phone, I'm just like still still like it was yesterday. It's crazy. Wow. So can someone benefit from cognitive hypnotherapy even if they haven't got something specific they need to work on?
Well, I would say yes. Of course, I'm going to say yes. If we go back to what I was speaking about earlier about what the purpose of therapy is, which is I think to make yourself happier. Hmm. And if you look at your life and say, am I living the life that I want? Am I following my fun? Am I having the most fun I could have in this life as me? And if the answer is no, then it doesn't need to be a specific thing that you know is wrong. There is just a direction you're not following. Mm. Then it could definitely help with that. Because people look at therapy and coaching as two separate things, and they're not. They're just a different hat you put on for a different market sometimes. And the coaching element of it just tends to be nudging you in a direction that you set. You say you have an intention and I help you and guide and give you some guidance as to how to do that. And so if there's anything in your life that you would like to change or your life itself, then yeah, COGHIP could do that for you.
I mean, I imagine you'd have to be a very interesting human to think that you don't need to improve in any way on something or other.
I've only met a few of those and I never believed them.
Well, as you always taught me, what's that about?
What's that
and
about?
And how can I use it?
Absolutely. It's usually a fear of being vulnerable, isn't it?
It's crazy how impactful this has been, actually. And finally, we love an actionable insight. So what should the listener take away from this conversation? Is there something that they can start working on today to help them better understand their unconscious mind?
In a way, you could. I think journaling is a very powerful thing to do, just as a means of you being able to focus what has happened in your day. And the focus of a journal that I would suggest is to think about what I've said about ELOC and ILOC. Mm. And so at the end of the day, if you looked back and said, how often today was I triggered into ELOC behavior, i.e. how was my response guided or dictated to by my situation, people around me, what I perceived to be happening in my day? And how many times was I ILOC? Was I in control of my choices and living life how I wanted it to be? Mm. And then when you've seen the balance, then you look at when that happens again, what could I do differently? Mm. Next time I'm ELOC, in that similar situation, what's my action plan? Because if we begin to see ahead alternatives, we can begin to act on those alternatives. We're not taken by surprise. Mm. And so this is a journey. It's a lifelong journey of ELOC to ILOC. And I think that's what we have to put our attention on. And if you find you keep getting triggered into an ELOC behavior in similar situations that you cannot change, go and see somebody who's a cognitive therapist. Mm. Because I will still do that. You know, for all that I know, my unconscious can still fool me and keep me away from change, helping me to change. So I'll go to someone that I've trained and they'll help me through it instead. So yeah, get some help. It's out there and it's not difficult.
Trevor, it has been amazing not only to see you again,
yeah,
and obviously
to see you too.
Bex, after so many years, 10, 12 years now, and to record a podcast with you talking about something that made such an impact on my life. And I hope people can take from this that they should look into cognitive hypnotherapy, even if they don't want to be a therapist.
Mm.
Like, it's something that people can learn to take control of their mind in a positive way and not let it always have the negative chatter that, you know.
You know, one of the things I'm most proud of is the fact that probably 90% of people who come to be trained by us to become cognitive therapists, it's because they've been to see a cognitive therapist. Mm. And so they've seen the difference they can make in their lives. And because of the kind of people they are, they want to help other people. You know, they don't pull the ladder up after them. They reach down to try to help other people as well. So I'm really proud of that. Mm. So I hope whoever's been watching this gets something as well.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on.
Pleasure.
A massive thank you to my guest and friend, Trevor Sylvester. Learn more about Trevor and his work at questinstitute.co.uk. If you'd like to train to become a cognitive hypnotherapist, I highly recommend it. It changed my life, helped me understand those around me, made me communicate better, and taught me how to accept people's differences. You've been listening to the Health Optimization Podcast. I'm Tim Gray. If you're watching on YouTube, comment and leave a thumbs up if you enjoyed it, and subscribe to see more. You can also find the podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and all the usual places you like to listen. Check out the show description for extra information and the links. See you next time, and remember, let's spread the health. Thank you again, Carol, for supporting this podcast. Go to our show notes for more details on how to get fitter, faster with the AI-powered Carol Bike.